Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Griese! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And good morning once again. This is Coach Chuck Griese, and it's another week of American Tennis. We had a lot going on this week with the Davis Cup and so many things. I've got a tremendous guest today, Dr. Mike Kernodle, who is a PhD in kinesiology. And he does motor learning, sports psychology, motor development. His research is just beyond belief, the amount of things that he has done with how things work with the athlete, with the person's body, and with the person's psyche in tennis and all sports. He's a member of so many organizations that it is just gives his credibility for what he's going to be talking about today so much. I'll talk a little bit more about him, but hang on the show past the commercials. We will be with Dr. Kernodle here in a few minutes, but I wanted to tell you that this is American Tennis. Each and every week we will bring new topics to the forefront. We have a topic that's sort of getting a little bit worn out, and that's about where in the heck are we at with American tennis right now, and what are we going to do to right the ship? American tennis mission is for you to stand up, to speak out, and to say those things that you want to say, and you just want an audience for people to listen to. If you have great things to say, we want to hear them. If you have bad things to say, we want to hear them. Edmund Burke, my favorite quote is that all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good people, the good men, to do nothing. Stay professional, address issues, do not address people, and you can pretty much say anything you want to say. Nobody will find fault with this. This is the UR Tennis Network, the letter U, the letter R, the number 10S Network. The UR Tennis Network, you can get each and every show of the week by going to your iPhone and picking up the downloading the app, the iTunes app. They have podcasts there. You can get every show that's ever given, has been given over the past 4 years on the UR Tennis Network. We thank Jason Haynes down in Houston area down there for starting the UR Tennis Network. We've gotten tremendous amount of things done. Lisa Stone in Atlanta, her show has taken off. The Parenting Aces show each and every week on Mondays. Tune into her show at noon on Monday. Jason Haynes' show 2 hours from now, 2 o'clock Eastern time on the UR Tennis Network. Listen to it as well. I wanted to remind you, for my camps, for my blogs, for past radio shows, go to chuckcreasy.net. That's K-R-I-E-S-E, chuckcreasy.net. And you can get the past shows, my blogs, and it is a doggone tough minefield right now, I think, to say those things that need to be said, to stay professional where people will even listen to them. And as I see, I think I have our guest on the line right now. Dr. Knodel, are you on the line?
Yeah, Chuck, how you doing today?
Hi, Mike, thanks for coming on. I've got to do a commercial here in a minute or something, but I've already given some of your background just right off the top of the show so that we can get people to hang on there. But I was talking about the slippery minefield we have, and I just wrote myself a little note here. I said, as a radio talk show host, I should just be blasting what happened this past weekend with our Davis Cup team. But as a loyal participant with the USTA, a coach for many, many years, and a coach who has also been blasted himself, as you have, by the way, one of your accolades, that you have been Coach of the Year and you also won conference championships. You also a player at University of North Carolina on those great teams in the old days. Don Skakel won 21 out of 22 championships, and so you've got tremendous playing background, and we always got blasted as coaches, but you always hesitate to blast people for not performing, whether it's Peyton Manning or anybody. You have tremendous sympathy, but my gosh, Mike, that was awful. I mean, do you have any quick comments about that? You wrote a very passionate letter to Wayne Bryan I saw today, and I'm not going to read the whole thing, but you can talk about what you want to. But what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think one of the things that was very apparent was the lack of depth in American tennis, especially with the men. I mean, with Isner going down with his ankle injury and being unable to play, that leaves San Querrey as basically the number one guy, and then you've got to choose from a bunch of guys that are down, in the 90s or even outside the top 100 as your number two singles player. Of course, we've got the Bryans there for doubles, but I was a little disappointed in the choice of Donald Young because he'll have a good win every now and then, but he has no weapons. And I thought a better choice might be Kudla or Ryan Harrison or even Sock. They've got more game. Or Klon, and Klon's been playing pretty well recently, but putting Donald in there, nothing against Donald, but he's just.
Mike, we're both coaches. Here's why I use him as a reference sometimes, and I hate to say tweener, but he is not tough enough off the ground to grind 30, 40 balls, okay? So he's always going to lose to a better counterpuncher, definitely, which Murray is, and somebody who's a better grinder. So he's not tough enough to grind. He's not big enough or doesn't have enough offense to attack. Now, that leaves him as a counterpuncher. Am I right? I mean, am I right in going there?
And if somebody
attacks, he can counter well with the brilliant skills that the good Lord has given him. But really, on red clay against Dagon, there's just no chance there. He won six games, and it's nothing against him. He's going to give his heart. He had couple wins at the U.S. Open, but my golly, what is that about? I would love to have Ryan Harrison in there. I mean, Ryan Harrison is, I think, our best chance. What are your thoughts, Mike, on Ryan Harrison?
Well, he's got the big serve, and he's got the big forehand. He moves reasonably well, but I'm not convinced that tactically and strategically he's at the level that he needs to be to be a top 50 player, and he's starting to get a little bit older, and I'm not sure that I see any American guys right now that, you know, give me confidence that they're going to be up in that top 50, top 30 even. And if you look at the ages, you know, Isner's getting older, Sam's getting older. He lost to Ward. You know, he was up 4-2 serving, and he gets broken five straight times. I mean,
that's his legs. That's his legs going, isn't it?
Yeah, it was. And the guys, he's been on the tour for long enough now and played enough big matches that he should be able to handle that. I saw, you know, Courier was, I thought he did a very nice job of being positive and coaching and trying to encourage. But, you know, when things aren't there, they just aren't there. And I just don't know what we have to go to. From what I've gathered, in the rankings right now, don't the Australians have the top two junior men in the world? And we,
yeah.
I mean, I don't think we have anybody that's up.
Well,
you know,
now
really
we have, you know, Francis Tiafoe won the Orange Bowl. You have Michael Moe,
that's
and you
right.
have the other,
yeah.
the other guy that he Francis beat in the finals, who is. Just very tough kid. And traditionally, to be fair, we've done excellent through about age 15 or 16. And we had Vesa Panka on 1 week, and he made this point, Mike. He said that we're maybe the best in the world at bringing kids to a certain point, to 15 or 16, but we lose all our kids at 16, 17, 18, and then college, forget it. I mean, that talent is just pushed aside. You know, in colleges and stuff. So yeah, you're right with that. Mike, I want to go to a little bit. I want you to be able to comment on that as much as you want, but I wanted to go to a bigger topic here. And you know, you've got so much expertise in so many different ways as a player, as a coach, as a mentor of coaches, players, teachers, with your PhD and all of the sports science that you've gotten. You're the best person to talk about in so many areas. But I wrote a quote this morning, and in this, on this show, week after week, as you know, I am so disheartened when we talk about whether it's participation trophies or the dumbing down of this, the dumbing down of that. Now we're dumbing down college scoring and all those things. But here's my quote. Here's my quote, Mike, and see, this popped in my head on the way to work today. We can not ever be excellent in our culture as long as we continue to remove or dumb down those tough rites of passage that it takes each individual to be excellent. Now, you're a PhD. Could you imagine the dumbing down of a PhD, which they may be doing, and then everybody sort of gets a PhD? Can you comment on that before we go to commercial in here, Mike?
Yeah, Chuck, I think what you're saying is kind of pervasive now in our culture and in tennis. And, you know, this is, you know, there's, throughout the literature, there's a lot of information that suggests that in order to learn, to be able to retain the information, to be able to transfer it from practice to competition, whether it be on the field or, you know, from studying in the classroom to taking tests and exams, you want to be challenged. You want to have thought-provoking challenges thrown in your way so that you have to work hard, you have to think, you have to be creative, you have to problem solve. And that way, the information that you gather stays in long-term memory, it's more easily accessible, and you get to higher levels. Now, and that's true with anything. That's one of the things I have to work with my students at the early stages is actually teaching them how to study, because coming out of high school, they've been kind of, with the No Child Left Behind, they've been taught to study for the test, and their critical thinking skills are not particularly well developed. And I think that's what, you know, one of the problems that you're going to see with the ROG and with these reduced number of games and everything for college tennis, I think you're taking away that challenge, that problem solving, and it's definitely not going to make it a very good transferal from those that may want to go from college tennis to professional tennis. I mean, it's going to, I think it's going to be a real problem in a negative.
The other day, Mike, I was giving some seminars, and the fellow who was teaching was having his staff watch Navy SEAL training. And there's some good stuff on YouTube about this, how hard it is. And, of course, now with the Lone Survivor movie, the thing is that this is very well documented, that these are the toughest of the toughest of the tough. And I don't see us doing this in tennis. I don't see us making the toughest of the tough out of the tough. And I mean, I don't want to be making fun, but one of the slogans that the USTA has put out there now is "Let's outwork the world." Are you familiar with that? With that quote, "Let's outwork the world."
I've heard it, and you know, over the past 20 or 30 years, they've had one thing after the other come out. And I'm not sure how well these things are thought out, because I don't think any of them have worked. I mean, you know, Cartoon Network or this ROG thing, which is, seems to be collapsing under its own weight in a lot of areas. I mean, what are they going to do about it? I mean, I hear a lot of talk from them on a regular basis, but I just don't see any results. And there's some real problem areas that I think they need to get into. But unfortunately, you know, they kind of talk a good game, but from what I've seen, they're not really willing to take information from outside sources, people that would be considered experts in the field, if it doesn't jive exactly with what they want to do. And I think a lot of them are chained to, you know, to the almighty dollar, because they're getting all kinds of bonuses for doing certain things, and if they, you know, if they don't do exactly what they're told to do or supposed to do, they lose their jobs. And, you know, they've got a lot of people making a lot of money. So, I mean, they can say that, but, you know, let's see what happens.
Well, I don't know. Who knows how to outwork the world? You know, the Harrisons, you know, Pat Harrison, the dad. But those two boys back 5 or 6 years ago, I can remember I got to travel around with some kids from Thailand and from Southeast Asia, which – it was quite an interesting experience. But those Harrison boys were the toughest, toughest kids, you know, good, just tough, tough Louisiana kids down there. And I was sort of, whoa, here we go, this is it, you know, type of thing. And also I know Dennis Kudla. He was raised there in the training center up in College Park. You know, and I don't know Sock or really maybe even Donald Young, what he did, or some of these kids coming up. But the point is that, do we have anybody out there that knows? You say, all right, they're not going to the experts. Well, they would say, no, we go to sports psychologist, Mike, and they are telling us, listen, when it gets past 100 degree on this ball, or wait a minute, we have to stop the matches. And the sports scientists are saying, oh, look, a 10-minute break between the second and third set, and so on and so forth. Do we have anybody that knows how to outwork the world? Who do they go to, Mike? Who should they go to?
I've got some suggestions. Number one, as far as the exercise physiology is concerned, hydration, nutrition, all that stuff, Michael Bergeron was on the USTA Sports Science Committee with me for 5 or 6 years and was exceptionally, extraordinarily underused. He's now with the Sanford Health Group, and he's like a major guru with all kinds of things. He came up with one of the now working hydration programs for football around the country. He's doing a tremendous amount with youth sports. He would be fantastic. Another guy that I think would be great for the high-performance type players is one of maybe the best guy I've ever seen on the court teaching all the way from beginners up to a really elite players, and that's Brett Hobden. Brett Hobden. Brett's down in Naples, Florida. He is potentially going to be working with Tommy Haas in a little bit. But I've seen him take players from, you know, that are talented but had, you know, some flaws, and I've seen him take them out on the court, and within a week to 2 weeks, just completely revolutionizing the way that they play, and watching them go out and beat players they never had a chance of beating before. Those are the kind of guys that you need involved.
Now, Michael Bergeron and Brett, they do not believe that making it easier makes it better, correct? They believe hard to pick up, hard to put down?
Oh, yeah. But Michael will tell you, he's done a lot of the work with, you know, the time limitations and the breaks and stuff like that. And, you know, I'm not actually against that. It just depends upon how it's done and when it's done. But you definitely need to make sure that they're hydrating properly, and especially in the juniors, the younger juniors, you do want to have those breaks and gradually work them, you know, along the continuum to the point where they can deal with the really hard matches. But yeah,
well,
I've got no problem with.
Well, there you go, though. Okay, Mike, now you're a PhD and you're in kinesiology and you've done all this and you know the experts. But I think maybe we're outsmarting ourselves. We've never, ever – I looked up tennis deaths because of heat, and there's none on YouTube or on Google. I've always argued that – go ahead.
There are a lot of instances, though, where kids got heat exhaustion, got to the point where they were cramping really bad, hallucinating.
Sure.
And we need to make sure that that's not part and parcel of the hard work. But I agree with you in a certain sense about the hard work part, because I see things going on at some of the academies that just drives me crazy. But go ahead.
No. Here's the thing. I've always said that the tennis players, when they get tired, it's not like football where they have to stay on the field in their helmet and gear, and they just get the – basically in tennis, when you get tired, you miss balls and you lose. I mean, you're very quickly, you're off the court. But I call it the shoe bomber syndrome too, Mike, where, you know, when we have one or two instances of something happen – all of a sudden we have this movement, and now our kids are playing four game sets, 10-point tiebreakers for the third set. They're taking a 10-minute break up at Kalamazoo after the second set, which completely kills momentum. You know, I mean, we've gone to the opposite extreme. I mean, am I wrong there? Or tell me what you think now. Maybe I am wrong.
No, I think. You're right in a certain sense, Chuck. I think it's been overdone. But, again, I would not be against a bit of a continuum with beginners, young players, and you gradually get them used to playing longer and longer and longer matches.
Yeah.
I've got no problem with that. But you know, in the 16s and the 18s in Kalamazoo, no, they don't need that. I played Kalamazoo. There was no such thing as that.
We had we were there. This is you're gonna like this one because you live in a college town and I lived in a college town most of my life. And there were 13 kids that got heat exhaustion or overheated the first day at Kalamazoo. This has been 4 or 5 years ago or 6 years ago when they started allowing 196 kids to get there. And I said, everybody wants the T-shirt and they're not really there to win. And the kids were cramping all over the place, and this USTA official says, oh, my golly, the conditions are too hot today. It was 87 or something like that. And I said, no, give me a break. These kids aren't trained here to win. They are cramping because they drink all the time. They party all the time. I mean, I've been around enough kids. I know when kids are hungover, whether it's a Saturday morning or after Thursday night football games or whatever. I know the difference when they get really thirsty, they get red, and then they start cramping and they're not fit for it. So anyhow, that's just I don't know.
they may not have been in good enough shape either, too.
It
would be interesting to see how many of those that were cramping and dropping out were in the upper echelon of players and how many were in the lower echelon of players.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah.
That's exactly for sure, Mike. Listen, Mike, I want to talk about this thing going on, this movement in college to maybe pay the football and the basketball players. Let me go to commercial. We'll be right back. Okay, hang on, Mike. Can you? This is great. I'm gonna.
Yeah.
Looking forward to having the second part of the show here. We'll be right back to Chuck Creasy in American Tennis. Hi, this is Chuck Creasy. I want to talk about our 2014 Total Tennis Training Camps at the Citadel in June in Lexington, Sumter, Atlanta, and Landrum, South Carolina in July. Go to chuckcreasy.net, chuckcreasy.net, or totaltennistraining.com. We've been doing camps since 1976. This will be the 38th summer that we will be having children under our supervision and training in our Total Tennis Training Camps. We've always stressed in Total Tennis Training the physical, the mental, and the emotional aspects of their training. We've had over 15,000 children in our camps since 1976. We also, in the higher level camps, work with momentum control. The power of momentum is the most powerful force in sports. Please come this summer, 2014, to Chuck Creasy's Total Tennis Training Camps. Go to chuckcreasy.net. Also, join us with American Tennis every Wednesday at noon. You can get all the shows at chuckcreasy.net as well. Or call area code 864-710-6973, 864-710-6973. Trying to help people make them in America. And Mike Kernodle, our guest today on the American Tennis program on UR Tennis Network. If you want to talk to Mike today or be on the show, call area code 714-583-6853. Mike, you've coached tennis. You've been around college atmosphere forever. I mean, I hate to say forever. I'm giving our ages away, but so much respect there for your work in the trenches, but also in the laboratory. They're bringing up now a lot about this paying football and basketball players and your higher. We all know that they're going to have four super conferences, right? I mean, they're going to have the Big 16, the Pac 16, the out west, it'll be the Southwest 16, and Southeast Conference. Or, you know, we're going to have about 64 super teams, I guess. That's the way it all seems to be headed. There might be 80. And this sounds like it's going to happen. So, you know, I guess I'd like to get your spin on the whole thing or your beliefs of the whole thing, Mike, if you can.
Sure. Well, first of all, personally, I don't think the athletes should be paid. However, I do think that if their image or their name is used on a jersey or anything else, a portion of that money should be set aside, and it should be given to them after they graduate. Because because they're coming to school to play athletics, I don't think they should be paid. It could open up a real Pandora's box, Chuck. I got some interesting statistics here that might kind of illuminate some of the problems. Some information from 2012. there were 228 athletic departments at the NCAA Division I level public schools. Out of the 228, only 23 generated enough money just to cover their expenses. Now, of those 23, 16 received some type of subsidy, okay? And that means they got money from the university or from student fees or something like that. And the subsidies for all Division I athletics rose by almost $200 million compared to 2011.
Jeez.
So you can imagine what it is. And in 2012, the subsidies for D1 programs, check this out, $2.3 billion, which means that's about one-third of the money they spent. So that's, I mean, so D1 Athletics spent $6.9 billion in 2012.
Oh, my gosh.
So you can imagine what's going to happen. Now, keep in mind that, you know, rising scholarships costs, you know, had a lot to do with that. But interestingly enough, coaches' compensation went up 9.2% in that 1 year, while spending on scholarships only went up 8.7%. So think about this. You've got maybe, let's see, Texas was one. They took in $163 million. Can you believe that? In 1 year. And they spent almost $140 million. Ohio State was number two at $142 million, spent $124 million. But pretty much after that, everybody's spending more than they take in. Now, where is the money going to come from when you get down below the top 10 schools to pay the athletes? Probably from student fees. They're going to have to raise student fees even more. Now, you can imagine, I'm at Appalachian State University, and they're going to go Division I football next year. Well, the powers that be here pretty much promised that this would not be done on the backs of the students, and they would have money coming in from all these different places, but they just raised student fees again, and I think we have the highest student fees, athletic fees, in the entire North Carolina system. So, you know, the thing is, where is the money going to come from? The second issue is, who do you pay? Do you just pay the football players, and do you pay by position? Does the first string get more than the second string? Do you pay tennis players? Do you pay lacrosse players? Do you pay wrestlers? I mean, you can imagine the amount of money that could add up to if you've got 200-300 athletes at your school. Where's the money coming from?
Mike, it's unbelievable. I mean, you know, we're in tennis. I mean, I've been in tennis all these years, and right away I know what's going to get dropped. I mean, we've had over 450 college teams dropped already. I mean, it's not like – look, teams like App State, Citadel, Furman, you know, Ohio Universities and people – well, maybe Ohio Universities or something could compete a little bit. But you're saying only 23 operated – in the red or in the black, anyway.
Well, yeah, but not all of those. Let's see. Ohio State, Texas, LSU, Penn State, and Oklahoma were the only ones that operated without getting subsidies.
That's unbelievable.
Everybody else had to have subsidies to help them. So, you know, you can imagine what's going to happen. Now, you know, of course, a lot of men's athletic programs have been dropped due to Title IX issues. But this could be even more pernicious. I mean, think about this. I mean, and also think about the recruiting deficit that's going to occur. Where are you going to go as an athlete? Okay, if you are offered a full scholarship plus payment for your services, are you going to go to Ohio State or Florida or Texas A&M, or Michigan, or Alabama, or are you going to go to one of the lesser schools?
Well, you're setting up a semi-pro league, is what you're doing. And
yeah.
The other thing you brought up is the Title IX issues. I mean, can you imagine now if basketball men players get paid and basketball women players do not?
Can't do it.
I mean, you can't do it. You can't do it. And it doesn't matter if women's sports do not bring revenue in. The money just can't come out of the thin air. So I don't – okay, let me ask you this. Where is this movement coming from? I mean, it seems so illogical. Is there some – you would think there's some ulterior motive or something going on to bury college sports, but where is this movement coming from?
I don't know. That's a good question, Chuck. I think, you know, the original lawsuit, I think, is the Ed O'Bannon suit. And, you know, the player out of UCLA that's been suing, you know, for payment for a long time because, you know, they were using his image or using his name to generate money. And, you know, I think it was up to that point it was understood that, you know, when you came, you were on a scholarship and, you know, it was just understood that your image was and your name were available for use. But, you know, legally, you know, I'm not so sure that's the case. And that's why I'm suggesting that if the people that get paid are the ones whose images and names are used to sell paraphernalia, jerseys, and, you know, things of that nature. But, you know, the lawyers, I think some lawyers got a hold of this. And it's like anything like a good tort lawyer. You know, they smell money, and here they come. It's like chum in the water. I think they saw a real possible issue here. And it's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out because, you know, again, who gets paid, which schools, you know, reap the benefits of that.
Court reform or what do they call it, tort reform? You know, I mean, you think of the problems that we have in our government and how many problems are caused by greed. And, okay, for example, and I don't want to go into politics, but, of course, health care. I mean, the problems were in healthcare, of course, wasn't about our healthcare. It was healthcare costs and healthcare access, right? I mean, we had the best healthcare system in the world, you know, but it's healthcare costs, healthcare access. Healthcare costs were caused by, what, the ambulance chasing lawyers, I guess, and all of the, you know, the problems there where doctors had to, you know, start charging more and everybody and the liability. And And, you know, Texas, I just heard that Texas has a law out there where it's a pretty cool state, by the way, I think. You know, they basically, if you lose the court case, you pay everything. And that's probably as simple as we should have done everything here. But let's get back to this with tennis and how this will affect us. Fast forward 10 years from now, what do you see happening to, say, college tennis? And, of course, I blame college tennis a lot, Mike, for our demise at Davis Cup and our demise at not having any players coming through at all. I don't put all the blame on the USTA. So what do you see happening? What's going to happen to tennis, college tennis?
Boy, I don't know, Chuck. I mean, I wish I had the crystal ball, but, you know, the way things are going, it's, you know, I wonder if it will end up being like a team tennis type situation because, I know one of the original mitigating factors with this change to in the scoring had to do with the NCAAs where you had all the men's and the women's teams at the same locale and they were playing matches all through the night and it was causing some real problems. And I still don't understand why they don't just have, you know, a men's NCAA championship. You can have it at the same venue, you know, just on back-to-back weeks. And, you know, that would spread things out. It would make it a lot easier to manage as far as time management is concerned. I think it would make it easier on the teams, easier on the coaches. But everything they're doing seems to, like you said, be dumbing it down. This new scoring system was, from what I gathered, the main impetus for that was they wanted to try to make it more palatable for viewing on television, and a little bit more palatable for viewing by the paying quote unquote public. And I just, you know, I think there was a little article by Steve Bellamy, you know, who's the founder of the Tennis Channel, and he really didn't think it was going to make difference one way or the other, except that it was probably just going to dumb down tennis. So we may very well go to a If we continue to have, you know, men's tennis, and by the way, I think men's tennis is in much more jeopardy than women's tennis because, as we all know, football is the tail that wags the dog at most of these institutions. And if you're talking about Title IX and equanimity as far as scholarships are concerned, you can't get rid of the women's tennis because you know that's one of the it's like 8 scholarships, and that would be I think it would be almost impossible to get rid of them. However, men's scholar men's is 4.5, and there's no Title IX issue there, so I would actually see men's tennis in more jeopardy than women's tennis.
Well, you're right. Explain that to people who are listening. People don't understand that a lot of times, how football in the proportionality package play into that. We had a show last year last February, completely dedicated to Title IX issues. But explain that real quick so people understand that.
Well, there's really three prongs to Title IX, and you have to be adhering to at least one of the three and be making progress in the other. I still don't think they've really ever come to complete closure on what it means to have, like in Division I, you have 85 full scholarships available to you. And by the way, in football, by the way, that doesn't mean 85 in-state, half of them are in-state or half of them are out-state. You could have 85 athletes coming from out of state, and you can have all of them on full scholarship. Okay, so if you have total equanimity, total equality, that means that just to match up with football, you've got to have 85 full scholarships for women.
Right.
Another way it's been looked at is the percentage of the population at the university. So if 60% of the population at the university is females, 60% of the scholarships should go to females.
Right.
They're still struggling with this issue. But the main thing is, though, again, how this relates to tennis is they're not going to be able to cut women's tennis programs. And you were right about women's basketball. If men's basketball gets paid, women's basketball is going to have to get paid.
Right. And this will be the Title IX thing that really sinks the ship for non-revenue sports, or minor sports, as we used to call them. And the proportionality issue, we see of course, they created like rowing teams and immediate teams, at cheerleading teams, competition. They have like 3 different kinds of NCAA cheerleading competitions. You have show cheerleading, competitive cheerleading, and something else, just basically to get bodies who are taking full scholarships or scholarships position to complete the Title IX. And athletic directors, our biggest problem, of course, is to how do you do with the facilities and everything like that. I'm just going to throw this out. There's 2 problems I've always had. I've never understood why, when they started Title IX, Mike, that women had to leapfrog 100 years or 80 years at that point. Everything that it took men 80 years to get, now women get this first year or second year or whatever. I never understood that. But the thing that aggravates me more than anything is that Title IX was never, ever, ever set up to protect women from other countries. It was our taxpayer dollars are supposed to go to USA men and women, to USA women for sure, for Title IX. And it's just very, very aggravating to me that like 65% of the women's scholarships in tennis go to foreign women. So my daughter and your daughter really are not being protected by Title IX. We're protecting women from Spain and from France and from Italy and from Russia and from so on and so forth. So I know I'm a little bit outspoken there. What are your quick thoughts on that? Am I barking up the wrong tree there, or what's your thoughts?
Well, of course, there's a lot of coaches and a lot of people in the United States right now, and I think Wayne Bryant's quite outspoken about this, about the very large numbers of foreign athletes that are coming into the United States and getting full scholarships. And, again, as you know, Chuck, it kind of boils down to, winning in the bottom line. If you can't, there's a limited number of really top-level American juniors. And in order to compete, they have to go international. And I'd be willing to bet there's a substantial amount of budgetary dollars that are spent sending assistant coaches traveling, to Europe and Asia and all over the place, you know, looking for talent that's not, you know, U.S. born. So, yeah, I have a problem with that. I was on a committee a number of years ago. I was the chair of the ITA Sports Science Committee, but I was also on a committee looking at this problem, and this suggestion and the vote from our committee, I remember, was very much in favor of limiting the number of scholarships for international players. And we got some information back from David Benjamin, and basically what they said was that, well, we just can't do that because there are some legal issues, but we were never told what the legal issues were.
Let me jump in. This drives me crazy because junior college did it. They never have had a lawsuit. They won't have any lawsuits. Who's going to sue the kid? Oh, I'm sorry, I'm coming to your country and you don't have a spot for me? Give me a break. Do you think the kid's going to sue? Or do you think the athletic director, who's going to sue? Nobody's going to sue. And that was a bunch of bunk from the ITA. I just think that they bellied up. They bailed out on that challenge. But that has killed us. It's killed thousands and thousands of opportunities that our children should have had, could have had, would have had, if the ITA had just manned up and daggone it, done what they should have done, and it was awful, awful, awful. We got a caller here, area code 678-467. You want to talk to Dr. Schnodel today here? Who's calling, please?
Yeah, Dr. Leo Gudenfeld, can you hear me?
Okay.
Hey,
Mike, I recognize the voice, but this is Dr. Who are you? No, wait a minute. Dr. Who?
Leo Gudenfeld.
Leighton Good. I think this is J.P. Weber, Mike, you know, but go ahead, Dr. Labenthal. Dr. Labenthal.
This is Dr. Gudenfeld. I don't know any Weber.
Okay. Well, how can I help you, Doc? You're talking to Dr. Knoll.
Dr. Knoll, my English is bad. We have done studies here in Germany on baby weight and length. The ITF is now going to go forward with the baby weight and length correlative studies with regard to racket length.
As far as racket length. Okay, now let's get this straight. You're doing studies in Germany here, which is a socialist country, as you know, as France and some of these other ITFs. Okay, and you're doing studies now based on the length of the baby, and you're putting the weight in the racket ahead of time. Okay, you've already done this scientific thing.
I'm
so
sure
go ahead real quick and then ask doctor.
As a fellow professor, I'm sure Dr. Knoll knows that the amygdala is a very impressive, all things originate with the amygdala, with the child, and that the child is born, he sees the father, and he sees the father's racket length, and then from there he sees the racket length, and he knows how he will be as a player and what racket length he can then have. We have had success with Malise, Federer, Murray, and they all went by the ITF baby length and weight charts.
Okay, now, go ahead, Mike, you have a question.
Is this guy auditioning for the new Jimmy Fallon show later on?
No, I think, well, he's got a redneck accent, so if he must be from southern Germany, so... But the point is...
It's interesting how his accent kind of... becomes very American all of a sudden when he can't figure out what he wants to say.
but let's go to the topic here. The ITF has a new way of studying what kind of rackets that you need. The baby weight and length criteria, correct? And so you measure the baby and you weigh the baby. How early do you weigh the baby and measure the baby to decide on the length and the kind of racket?
3 months after birth.
3 months after birth. Okay, 3 months after birth, and this is a fail-safe system.
This is the length. This is the length
okay.
measurement. The weight measurement is taken at 18 months.
okay?
I thought it was 3 months.
No, that's Lee.
He just contradicted himself.
That's Lee.
Okay.
Okay, hey, Chuck, we're wasting time here. We need to get on something more serious. This is ridiculous.
Anyhow, I think he's calling in. I think he's trying to make a point that are we gumming things up here, Professor, with too much scientific research here, or what?
I was going to. Obviously, Dr. Knodel has not been reading Wiechert's tennis lately, and the German studies that are out there. I was hoping to have our shtick together a little bit better, but we didn't quite get the shtick. Maybe next time we'll get the shtick better. Hey, Dr. Knodel, how you doing? And yeah, I saw your stuff, and yeah, it's very frustrating to see what's going on, and some of the stuff's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, trying to determine racket length and stuff like that at an early age, and plus the fact, once again, with the ROG, it's got to be skill-based, not age-based. I mean, they don't seem to understand, or they just don't want to read all of the literature that's out there, all the research that's been done with motor learning and motor development, that development is skill-based, not age-based. And the fact that, you know, you get a kid that's got a racket and they're hitting really well with yellow ball, and somebody from the – and I've seen this happen. They're really, really good players with the right racket length, and some USTA executive comes up and says, No. You really shouldn't use that. We need to measure you and go to a different size racket. I'm sitting there cracking up because they have no clue.
Is it money based? Well, if it's not skill based, hang on a minute there. Let me jump in real quick. But Dr. Knodel, is it money based? Is it based on trying to just produce a new industry where you sell? I notice all the catalogs now have the REG. Equipment, and they, you know, I hate to say that, but is it money based?
From what I gathered, and this is just from memory, this was started by, you know, one person at the ITF, and they got into the USTA, and I think Lucy Garvin was the president at the time, and I don't know if this happened or not, but I think there was an indication that perhaps a very nice job was waiting for her. She pushed this ROG, and then the people that took it over were, you know, promised bonuses. And I remember being on a conference call with McEnroe and Patrick McEnroe and other people, and I tried to explain to them this whole thing about, you know, if your child was, you know, the mean age for walking is 12 months, if your kid could walk at 8 months, would you force them to crawl for, you know, until they became 12 months, then all this money came into play. I think there were probably some deals with some of the companies, and I'm just supposing here things that I've heard. So I think it's a combination. And then, you know, on that conference call, they basically said they weren't really interested in player development. They were interested in numbers. And we can see what the results of player development are so far. So I think it's a combination of an ideology that somebody just thought was the way it was supposed to be done without any research to back it up, and then I think money got into it very quickly. So I think it's a combination.
Yeah, I mean that's what, you know, you would be led to think. I've often said about your analogy, Dr. Knodel, that where would we have been in innovation with like the Fosbury flop? I use that a lot of times on the show. Where would we be with innovation? Where are we going to innovate at all with the game if we cookie cutter everything? And care to talk about that just a second?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you are limited to a certain way and you don't allow critical thinking and thought, you know, problem solving and thinking, you know, everybody becomes kind of a robot, and you know, automaton, and you don't see those you don't see people trying new things, you know, deviating from the norm, and so you have no innovations. I mean, how do you think inventors, you know, come up with different things? I mean, they experiment, they think outside the box. I mean, you know, in the medical field, a lot of great finds have been ancillary to what they were actually looking for. You know, they might have been looking for a cure for this, and then all of a sudden they'd like, oh, my God, look over here. this actually works. And so, you know, the major fine was like an ancillary type of thing. So, you know, if you don't allow for thinking, if you don't allow for, critical thinking outside of the box, you're really limiting things.
Yeah, you know, I hate to, you know, you talk about medicine. I have a good friend who was in Australia, and this guy had what they believe really is a great immunology thing to cure cancer. And, of course, they can't do it in the States, so they've spent a couple years basically in Cambodia and some third world countries where people are dying and they have no hope, and they're trying to do it there because they believe that nothing will be done without a patented seal of approval anymore with innovation. And it frightens me, Mike, about tennis being that way without a patented seal of approval, whether it's USTA or the ITA or the NCAA or the, you know, on and on and on. And innovation, if we take it away from the sports arena, where in the heck are the kids going to learn it? So,
can I say something?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, jump in real quick there, caller, and then let Dr. Canola have the last 5 minutes.
I was going to say, you know, I think that they see the problems in what they have themselves. A lot of the people are now starting to see they're too controlling. There's too much regulation. There's too many rules. We just ran real fast a one-day tournament here this past weekend at the park, and the rules, the way they were set up, it was innovated by a guy out in Tucson, Arizona, Jim Refkin. His way of doing it, very, very simple. Play one set, play three matches, and be done with it, right? Well, here, because of all the rules, we were playing three, it was like at one age group, they played a tiebreaker at 3-all. One age group, they played the tiebreakers at 4-all. You played 2 out of 3 sets, but the third set wasn't a third set. It was
so
a
everybody's
tiebreaker.
Confused.
It was so convoluted, and I think that's what happens, and that's what's happened all along. Back in the day, there was a day in which the USTA was a great facilitator of tennis, and I think if we could pull them back in a lot of ways, if we could get out of some of the stuff that we're involved in, you'd find that things would probably clear up and be better.
Well said. I appreciate the caller for calling there. Mike, I'm going to give you the last 4 or 5 minutes here. The big thing there is he's right. I mean, people are afraid to just say creative incentives and say go get it, and we probably just need that, don't we?
Yeah, and, you know, it's really kind of disconcerting and a little bit sad because, you know, the USTA has almost unlimited coffers financially, and I really feel like they could make a huge difference if they would reorient the way that they are spending money, the people that they provide finances to. I still think there needs to be a nonpartisan panel of experts that are unafraid to make suggestions and changes because they're not beholden to the administration of the USTA. I really think that we need to put some money into traveling teams as far as doubles is concerned. Put some of our really top doubles players together and get them out there and finance them and playing tournaments together as much as possible. You know, when the Bryans are gone, it won't be that long. What are we going to do in David's Cup for doubles? And they're down playing doubles so much. There's so many other things they could do.
It's not college now. They've dumbed it down, and we're not going to be able to win those doubles. I mean, it's not in college, and it's frightening. It's frightening to me. So, Mike, I just got an idea off the top of my head. You have the professional background, plus you have the common sense background, plus the practical background of doing it day in, day out, day in, day out, day in, day out. I'd love it, man, if you could have a show. How about the tennis doctor's house call? Would you go for that? If we could figure out you are tennis or somebody could. I mean, I think that you just have so many interesting insights here, and I just wanted to encourage, please don't lose your heart of hearts to wanting to fight. I think as we get older, they sort of push us back in the closet and, you know, sort of run us off a little bit to where we just say, forget it, we're going to retire. And
yeah,
I think our best minds...
Chuck, In some cultures, people our age are actually valued. So, but apparently not here.
Well, you know, I'm right with you. I think that your wisdom, more than just your knowledge, plus your experience of the years, makes what you have is wisdom. And I completely agree. I just wanted to encourage you, you know, to please hang in there and keep voicing your opinions, and maybe sometime we can get people, you know, to listen to them, but we're in trouble. Any quick things here? I only got about a minute, Mike. Any quick things? Appreciate you being on, man. Anything?
No, this was a lot of fun, and I really enjoy just talking about tennis with somebody of your experience and getting JP on, and I still would love to see a bunch of us get together and as I mentioned in that email, come up with ideas from the experts and write a white paper about the problems that we see and specifically how we go about changing them, and send that white paper out and get it published to a number of organizations and magazines and newspapers so a lot of people could see it, so that they could see that there are problems, but there are changes that could be made.
I would like to put this on you, Mike Kernodle, Dr. Mike Kernodle. I would like to put this on you to invite 10 to 20 of people of your choice. They pay their own way up to Boone, North Carolina, Blowing Rock, North Carolina, or wherever, and put this conference together, this think tank, for a three-day weekend, which would include some trout fishing and at least one round of golf, but a think tank where we could put together that kind of white paper. And we'll put it on you, Mike.
Perfect. I've got a good friend who is big time outdoors, one of the best fly fishermen up here, and we've got some really good golf courses.
Well, I think, Mike Kernodle, this could be in the end, buddy. In the end, somebody has to pick it up and go with it. Thanks for being on today, Mike. We got to go there, man.
Made in America. Never fire tattooed on his left arm. Spend a little more in the store for a tag in the back of this USA. Won't buy nothing that he can't fix. With WD-40 and a Craftsman wrench, he ain't prisoner. He's just made in America.
Kernodle once again for his insights, his expertise, and his heart of hearts, just genuine concern for what's going on in American tennis. God bless each and every one of you. This is Chuck Creasy reminding you that you are in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or a loss. We'll see you next week.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.